Hey then, welcome to the Wellbeing Lab podcast, where you can discover the latest research in the fields of neuroscience and positive psychology to give you tested practical ways to thrive at work each day. I'm Michelle McQuaid.
And I'm Beck Melville. And guys, my wellbeing confession this week is last month I found myself stuck at my computer trying to finish off a report, questioning why I had to waste my time on this document and if anyone would even bother reading it. And after I finished my visit to Pity City and the report, of course, I realized that the only thing wasted about this moment was my ability to recognize the difference this work could actually make to others. Oh dear. So, Shell, this week's podcast is just the reminder I need to stay connected to what makes even the mundane meaningful at work. Heartfelt thanks to everyone for joining us for episode 6 of the Wellbeing Lab podcast for Zero, as we explore the recipes that can help you to thrive at work so you can realize your potential, build psychological safety, and embrace a customer mindset and help others to do the same. Today in the lab, we're exploring our fourth PERMA ingredient and focusing on the M, which stands for meaning. After all, if you're feeling that your work is pointless and makes no real difference to anybody, it's hard to embrace a customer mindset and believe that it's worth making any real effort when it comes to your work. So, Shell, why might making what we do meaningful at work matter?
Well, Beck, for decades, people have ranked having a sense of purpose in their work as more important than promotions, income, job security, or even flexible work hours. Yet for many of us, finding meaningful work feels like something that we just can't afford yet. But the good news is that studies have found that the single strongest predictor of meaningfulness in our work is the belief that our job has a positive impact on other people. And when we can see how what we do helps others, a growing body of evidence suggests that we'll feel happier, that we're more motivated, more committed, and more satisfied, which enables us to perform better and to thrive at work. Not only that, but when teams and organisations have a shared sense of purpose, it generates more positive energy, intrinsically motivates people, and heightens our willingness to sacrifice for the common good. In fact, an analysis of 30 Fortune 500 companies who had been identified as workplaces that had a higher purpose found that those companies made $8 for every $1.10 that companies made who lacked that sense of higher purpose, who were really just in it for the money. Now, why might this be the case? Well, the truth is that we each have a universal need to feel that what we do has a positive impact on others. So, Beck, let's see how you and our listeners are doing when it comes to making work meaningful at the moment. And this one is a really simple gut check to do. I want you to just take a moment and think about what is the positive difference that your work makes for others? So take a moment right now with us. See if you can answer this question. What is the positive difference that your work makes for others? So, Beck, when it comes to making what you do meaningful each day, how are you doing at the moment?
Well, Shell, aside from my report moment, which was short-lived, I'm generally doing pretty well when it comes to finding meaning in my work and understanding the difference my work makes for others. As you know, when you're equipping people with the knowledge and strategies to thrive, it's both an honour and privilege to hear about and see the positive impact this can have. But I have to admit, this wasn't always the case. After many years spent working in finance, both in Australia and overseas, where meaning seemed to be a scarce ingredient, it wasn't until I moved back to Australia with a young family and found myself having a career break that I surprisingly had time for a little introspection. I asked myself, if I could do anything at work, what would I most want to do and what difference could I make to others? So I reflected on what I loved most about my past jobs and realized it was all about the people and helping others to thrive, which is, of course, what I've spent the past 10 years of my life doing, studying and teaching positive psychology and neuroscience in workplaces. But Shell, again, I want to reiterate, this didn't just happen overnight for me, and we often all have moments where we struggle to answer this question. So today we'll share some tips and strategies to help you to try to figure this out. Sometimes the answer comes easily to us. Sometimes the challenge is actually keeping our sense of meaning in balance and not becoming obsessive. And of course, other times we feel what we do has plenty of meaning, but it just doesn't light us up anymore because it's no longer aligned with our strengths or the difference we most want to make. So, Shell, for those of us who are struggling at the moment to find meaning in our work, either because we still haven't quite figured out what difference we want to make for others, or because over time what we found meaningful has shifted for us, what does the research suggest when it comes to figuring this out?
Well, Beck, the good news is that we don't have to be saving the entire world in order to make our work meaningful. In fact, Professor Amy Resnuski of Yale University has found that no matter what your job description says, what you do each day can make a positive difference for someone somewhere. What matters here is how we think about the work that we do, not so much the tasks themselves. So, for example, in one set of studies with hospital cleaners, whose responsibilities included sweeping the floor, dusting, emptying the waste baskets in patients' rooms, Amy found that they were equally likely to describe their work as a job, something that paid their bills, a career, something that would lead them to better opportunities in the future, or as a calling that helped people to recover from illness by ridding the hospital of dangerous germs. So Amy found that it turns out that making your work meaningful is all about, firstly, looking for the positive difference that you can make for others, be they big or small, by embracing that customer or service mindset. Secondly, knowing how your work connects to the bigger picture of what your company's trying to achieve together so you feel part of something that is bigger than yourself. And lastly, finding ways to make sure that what you do each day is a genuine expression of your own deepest interests and values and strengths, part of who you want to be in the world. So Beck, I know you coach a lot of people on helping them figure out how they find the meaning in what they do each day at work. So do you have any suggestions for our listeners who might be struggling right now to making their work meaningful on how they can figure this out for themselves?
I do, Shell. And I must admit, since learning about this research, it has been fascinating to go back to my previous finance roles and apply some of these exercises that I'm about to suggest. All of a sudden, interest rates and amortization schedules turn into the funding of medical equipment for hospitals that save lives, or computers used to predict severe weather conditions to protect entire communities. It puts a whole new lens on why what we did mattered. It's just that in the past, I hadn't looked for the difference we were making for others. So, Shell, in terms of helping others to find more meaning each day at work, I generally suggest starting small and trying to find your own cleaning moment, as you shared from Amy's study, by leveraging their values and strengths. You might recall in episode 4 of the Wellbeing Lab podcast, we recommended creating a strength surge by simply looking at your to-do list for the day, picking one or two tasks, and writing down next to them in capital letters the strength that you could use to make that task more energizing, engaging, and meaningful. And ta-da, you've just done some on-the-spot job crafting and found a small way to align what you do each day to those things that matter most to you. Secondly, try mapping meaning by grabbing a blank piece of paper and writing down all the ways you like to help others at work or outside of work. What lights you up when it comes to making a difference, big or small, frequent or rare, at this point in time? Then circle the three things on the list that you really like to do to help others. It's okay if that's your entire list at this point. Now take a look. Is there any pattern or common theme in what you've selected? Or is there one thing that you've circled that really makes you smile when you think of the chance of doing this for others? This is such a great place to start when it comes to exploring your purpose at work. So how could you create at least one small opportunity each day on your to-do list to integrate this into more of your work? Thirdly, try making the mundane meaningful by again grabbing a blank piece of paper and writing down the most tedious thing you have to do in your job, that thing that you dread having to do that you'd prefer to put off or hand over to someone else. Next to this task, draw an arrow pointing to the right and ask yourself, who does this help? What difference does it make for them? Then write your answer down. Now, you may find these two simple questions, who does this help, what difference does this make, are enough to suddenly find the meaning in the mundane, or you may find that if your answer isn't immediately personally meaningful, that you need to ask the question a few more times again before you reach your aha moment. And please feel free to get a colleague, your boss, or a friend to help if you get stuck. But I've yet to find a task, no matter how mundane, that doesn't make a difference to someone if we just stop for a moment and think about it.
Beck, we'll be sure to include all of those suggestions into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet, as always, which our listeners can download from the same spot where they got today's podcast. And I often think about the approaches you've described, Beck, as finding meaning with a lowercase m in our work. But for those listeners who are really wanting a deep sense of meaning with a capital M that brings that feeling of real purpose to what we're doing each day, it's important to be aware that unlike what we see in the movies, researchers have found that finding our purpose in life almost never strikes us like a bolt of inspiration from the sky, where we suddenly know forever after what we're meant to be doing with our lives. Instead, studies suggest that finding our purpose usually unfolds bit by bit. It often starts with discovering our interests, then that's followed by a period of learning and development and trying different things, which then turns into a lifetime of going deeper and stretching further as we find a way to use those things that interest us to make a real difference to others. So if you think about Steve Jobs' journey, Beck, he wasn't suddenly struck with the idea of creating personal computers and music devices and smartphones. He tinkered with electronics as a kid. He dropped in and out of creative classes in college. He worked at Atari on the video games. And then finally, after joining a computer club, he got inspired to start building computers with great graphic interfaces and eventually, as we all know, went on to change the way that people interacted with technology around the world. Now, again, Beck, I know you also coach people all the time around finding more purpose in their work. So do you have any other tips for our listeners who might want to find more meaning with a capital M in what they're doing each day?
I do, Shell. Firstly, Professor Angela Duckworth at the University of Pennsylvania suggests if you haven't found your passion yet, a great place to start is figuring out what actually interests you. We call this meaning making, and you can achieve this by simply sitting down with a pen and paper and answering some simple questions like, what do you like to think about? Where does your mind wander? What do you really care about? What matters most to you? If money wasn't an issue, what would you choose to do and why? How might this help others? What do you love doing, are good at, and get lost in? And in contrast, what do you find absolutely unbearable? And if you find answering these questions hard, think back to your teen years when vocational interests commonly sprout. For example, as social captain in my final year of high school, I loved bringing people together, connecting others, and helping them feel a sense of belonging, which are actually the same things that light me up today in the work that I do. The only problem was that my career counsellor got involved, and let's just say it was quite the detour to find my way back to the difference I wanted to be making. Now, if you struggle to answer these questions yourself, you might want to try and ask others what they think you're good at, create a list, and consider what that reveals about you. And Shell, as always, will be sure to put these questions into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet. Secondly, give yourself permission to explore a passion project at work or at home to play with what really interests you and see where it takes you. As your interests grow, see how others are using those interests to accomplish something that goes beyond themselves and consider how you can also make a difference by using your interests in the service of others. This is why companies like Google actually allow time for their staff to explore their interests, but of course you don't have to wait for your boss's permission to make this possible. Start where you are and see if you can incorporate even just 10 minutes a day to exploring your passions. You might want to align it with your strengths habit or your positive emotion activity to get an extra power shot and improve a couple of well-being pillars simultaneously. And of course, as always, we recommend using your SDT guide for success and make a want-to choice about what your passion project might be. Track your progress by mapping what impact your efforts are having for yourself and others, and buddy up with someone in your team or a friend to share how you're trying to prioritise what matters most to you each day.
Beck, again, we'll be sure to put all of these suggestions into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet for our listeners. But we do also want to caution everyone that as with any of the wellbeing tools we've been playing with in the lab, you can have too much of a good thing when it comes to making your work meaningful. For example, Professor Robert Valorand of the University of Quebec in Montreal has found that when we feel really passionate about our work because it feels incredibly meaningful to us, we can become a little bit obsessive about what we're doing. Now, this tends to occur when our work starts to make us feel so competent, so good, and so alive that it becomes a way to compensate for other things that we might be missing in our lives, making it harder and harder to start disengaging from the activity. And as a result, we start to eat, live, and breathe our work, and we become unable to regularly switch off. Now, while researchers have found that this kind of obsessive passion is unlikely to do too much damage in the short term, over time it can start to really take control of our lives, putting us at risk of damaging our relationships, undermining our well-being, and eventually leading to burnout. And again, I think many of us have had that experience, either ourselves or someone close to us has become a bit obsessive about their work and the consequences that can come with that. And by chance, we've got leaders listening to the podcast thinking, yeah, but a bit of obsessive passion sounds like a great way for my team to get through all that work they've got piling up. Robert also cautions that not only does obsessive passion put your team at risk of burnout, but the more obsessive people become about their passions, generally the less flexible and open to change, to compromise, to sharing resources they also become as they start to try and do whatever it takes to protect what they care most about. And so long term, it's probably not great for teams either. Now, Robert does stress that short-term bursts of obsessive passion in the throes of a great idea or to meet an important deadline aren't generally a problem for us, but they do need an end date so that we can return to what he describes as a more harmonious level of passion. So, Beck, our passions are harmonious when we feel in control of what we're doing rather than it being in control of us. And as a result, we're able to put our work aside every now and then to keep it in balance with other parts of our life so that we can experience higher levels of physical health, psychological well-being, a sense of self-esteem and self-worth that's not just tied to our jobs, more positive emotions, higher levels of creativity, and a better level of work satisfaction. And while that may all sound pretty obvious, Beck, I think keeping our passion for work harmonious, particularly when what we're doing does feel incredibly meaningful for us, is something that many of our listeners might have struggled with from time to time. So do you have any practical suggestions to help us pull this off?
As a starting point, Shell, I'd suggest we use the PERMA 3-point check to see how we're feeling about our work from time to time, especially if we're feeling a little overwhelmed and finding it hard to fit in time to nurture our relationships and do other things that bring us joy. So remember, step one, how am I feeling? Step two, why am I feeling this way? And finally, step three, who do I want to be as I step forward? Now, if you are struggling to keep your passion for work harmonious right now, here's some strategies you might like to try as a way to step forward. The first suggestion is to restore balance. Short bursts of obsessive passion rarely do any lasting harm, but when the milestone has been reached, it's important to rebalance your life and put your passion back into perspective. Remind yourself of all the other things you love doing. Go back to your normal schedule. Revert to who you really are when life is harmonious. Secondly, intentionally cultivate alternative passions. Having more than one passion in your life will help you keep a passion from getting out of control. Each additional passion you cultivate outside of work gives you an opportunity to value the strengths you have beyond your job and lowers your chance of burnout. Think about what else interests you. What would you like to pursue purely for the joy of the activity? What lights you up outside of work? Finally, be sure to set boundaries. Avoid bringing your work home whenever you can. Leave your computer and those files that you didn't get to at work. Limit or don't check your work emails at home or while you're on vacation. Set an out-of-office message so that people know they can't reach you. The key becomes finding the right balance between being led by and following your passions and not letting them take control of you.
And Beck will be sure to also include all of those suggestions into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet for our listeners. And I have to say, for me personally, keeping my passions harmonious is definitely an ongoing process. So being able to use my PERMA 3-point check when work is feeling a little bit overwhelming, a little bit out of control, a little bit hard to switch off, is definitely a really helpful way for me to reset myself.
So, Shell, let's see if we can make sure our listeners are finding ways they can apply these insights and practices, whatever their jobs might be, with, drumroll please, the Let's Get Real round. Are you ready, Shell?
Go for it, Beck.
My first question today, Shell, is what if I'm trying to keep my passion for work harmonious, but my boss has obsessive expectations?
Beck, this is a question we often get asked in workplaces, and having worked in both small and large companies for many years where it seemed like we were always being asked to do more with less and your level of commitment was judged by how late you sat at your desk, I can absolutely empathise with this challenge. And Beck, there's no doubt that sometimes our bosses do have unrealistic expectations of us in terms of the amount of work they think we're going to get done and the number of hours they think we're going to be able to put in. But I have also found that sometimes we've assumed that our boss's expectations are unrealistic and we're running ourselves ragged trying to do what we think they require of us, when in actual fact that's not always the case. And to be honest, in my experience in most cases, there's often a little bit of both of those things going on when it comes to the need to behave with obsessive passion at work. So the truth is that at the end of the day, most bosses want to help people to thrive at work. Not just because, as we've been learning throughout these podcasts, that it's likely to make their teams more successful, which makes them look better, but also because morally, it's the right thing to do for people. Unfortunately, though, like many of us, most bosses mistakenly think of our brains and our bodies like machines, that you can flip that switch on at the start of the day and people's energy and productivity is going to continue at a steady and stable pace until they stop. And of course, neurologically and biologically now we know as a result of these podcasts and all the research we've shared that this is absolutely not the case. So being productive and effective, of course, isn't about the number of hours that you work. It's about how well you manage your energy and how well you're really able to thrive as you're going about your job each day. And as Robert's research has found, that means that long-term obsessive passions eventually are going to compromise our performance and our well-being. So if you're feeling this tug of expectation to work in obsessive ways, remember, as Christine Parath taught us in our last podcast, when it comes to our relationships, we can visit Pity City, but we can't live there. So though it might feel a little awkward or uncomfortable at first, if the expectations for what you can get done in your job feel like they're pushing you towards obsessive passion consistently, then it's time to have a kind conversation with your boss about how you're working together. And remember that this is the respectful thing to do. If you value and respect your boss and you want to be treated in the same way, when things aren't working, rather than moaning or complaining or feeling resentful about it and sitting in judgment, we want to get into curiosity and ask them about what is it they need to get done, how can we really find ways to make this work in a win-win-win outcome that's good for you, it's good for the team, it's good for your whole organization, so that you can keep your passion for work more harmonious and look after the levels of psychological safety and well-being in your team. But by chance you don't feel confident yet to have this conversation with your boss, then you might also want to just quietly start experimenting for yourself. For example, when I began quietly experimenting with my boundaries at work, I began creating regular commitments for a yoga class or a catch-up with friends or family that would mean I had to leave the office at a reasonable hour unless there was a real work emergency that required us to drop everything. And at first, people didn't really notice. And then when it became more of a pattern, yeah, there was the odd grumble from some team members. But in the end, the example that I set made it possible for others to also start leaving earlier, especially when they realised that I was actually no less productive, I was getting more work done, and I was a lot happier because I was looking after my well-being. And for the one team member that sat there until 8 o'clock every night grumbling, well, that was her choice and that was okay. Now, in my experience, Beck, when we start experimenting in small ways to keep our passions more harmonious, it's actually amazing how stuck we find that we've gotten ourselves into these stories we tell about what our bosses expect and what's actually possible in our workplaces.
It's so true, Shell. I once had that boss you've just described, or at least I thought I did. And then eventually when I plucked up the courage to have a kind conversation about expectations and reality, he was completely reasonable about prioritizing the workload to make things more harmonious. And as it turned out, my stories were in fact at the heart of my issue. The second question today, Shell, is our company has a vision statement, but no one remembers it because it isn't very meaningful. As a team or an organization, how do we create more meaning in the work we do together?
Well, Beck, one of my favorite examples of a team really bringing a vision statement to life and finding their shared sense of purpose is in a study that was done by Professor Adam Grant at Wharton Business School. And he found that when a team of university call center staff who were busy contacting alumni and asking for donations to fund student scholarships, when these callers were given the opportunity to talk, even for just 5 minutes, with students who'd been past recipients about the impact of that scholarship money on their lives, they gained an emotional sense of the difference that their work was really making for others. That vision became something that they could truly feel and see the impact of. Now, having seen the potential positive impact that they could have after meeting one of these students and talking to them for 5 minutes, the average caller was then able to double the number of calls per hour they were making, resulting in 144% more alumni donating. And not only that, but that increased the average $411 donation to more than $2,000, which quintupled the amount of money that they were able to raise. All from simply meeting and hearing the stories of the people that they were helping, so that vision statement was really brought to life and made meaningful for them. So by connecting directly with end users, we give our teams the chance to see their past and their potential impact. And this is why leaders at Facebook invite coders to meet the friends and family members who have been reconnected through the website, so that they understand why every line of code they write matters to people. It's why John Deere invites the employees who build tractors to meet the farmers who buy those tractors and to hear about how different features that they've added make their work that much easier or more enjoyable each day. And why leaders at Wells Fargo bank branches in the US film videos of customers describing how low-interest loans have been able to rescue them from debt and what that's meant for their lives. So when we help people to see the direct consequences of their work for others, we help them to find greater meaning. And this is actually one of the greatest untapped sources of motivation that any leader or workplace has available to them. So don't just rely on people's sense of meaning being found in a company vision statement. You really want to bring your company and your team's purpose to life for each other and make it real by regularly meeting the people that you actually make a difference for. Then once you've found your purpose, make sure that you use it to really guide your leadership decisions, to guide the way that you communicate about actions being taken in the organization, and to guide each person's behavior as they're going about their jobs each day. Again, it's really embracing that customer or service mindset to be the North Star for everything you're doing.
I refer to Adam's call center study often when talking about meaning in the workplace. And Shell, I love your other examples of how companies are helping their people connect to their vision by enabling them to see the positive difference their work makes to others. My last question for you today, Shell, is what if I'm really clear on what gives me meaning in my work, but organizational cutbacks or strategic changes keep undermining my ability to make this difference for others?
This is such a great question, Beck, and I did some work with a water management company where, as you might expect, people were often attracted to their roles because they wanted to make a positive difference in the way that we cared for our environment. Now, the company were regularly stepping on the perma-scale, just like our listeners have been, and this made it possible for us to really quickly discover that the biggest threat to people's well-being in this organisation were management decisions being made and shared without any real consideration for how it would impact people's sense of meaning in their work. So the first thing we did was to try and help the leadership team really understand that often the main reason people joined this company was because of the sense of meaning that they found in their work. And so any changes needed to be considered and shared in a way that helped people understand how those changes would help them continue to make a positive difference around those things that people really cared about, which in this case was caring for the environment. And if that wasn't the case, then there needed to be some really honest conversations about why those changes were being made regardless, so that people understood the context of those choices. Now, secondly, we taught people that disruptions that move us towards the edge of chaos, like cutbacks and reorganizations and strategic pivots, don't have to leave us feeling helpless, but can actually be really important opportunities to draw on our creativity and our resilience so that we can grow in new ways. And if you think about it, Beck, we've all had moments in our life and our work where changes we weren't that excited about at first have pushed us to change the way we were approaching what was happening, and as a result, new opportunities that enabled us to grow and do things better emerged out of those moments. So as much as we often cling to the hope of stability, like any living system in the universe, people and teams and organizations are wired to grow from disruption, not from a steady state of equilibrium. And the good news is that, like all living systems, we are actually wired to resiliently adapt to most of the changes we encounter in our environments, but it is shaped by our ability to see those opportunities as positive disruptions rather than something that we're going to try to ignore or avoid or resist or just hope will go away. So when organizational changes threaten your sense of meaning at work, try to embrace them as an opportunity to find new ways of continuing to make that difference for others that you care so much about. And I'm not saying that that's always easy, but if we think back to our hospital cleaners and remember, more than the tasks themselves, what matters is how we think about the work that we're doing and that we're looking for the opportunities for that to make a positive difference for others. The last thing I will say, Beck, is that if our listeners feel like their sense of meaning and purpose in their work is being totally compromised by organisational changes, and they have tried to find small ways to go on making a difference, but it's feeling like their sense of integrity and who they want to be now is really on the line, then perhaps that's just life's way of nudging us to make a bigger change and to find an organisation who's going to be a better fit for the positive difference that they really want to make for others. And that's completely okay. Sometimes these positive disruptions are designed to shake our lives up a little bit.
Shell, given how big it can feel to try and find more meaning in our lives, I love that we've found so many small ways today that we can intelligently make our work more purposeful, no matter what our job description says. And we can't wait to join you for our last Wellbeing Lab podcast for Xero, where we'll learn all about building grit so we can truly embrace a customer mindset and believe that we can accomplish the things that matter most to us. And to our listeners, thank you so much for being here with us today. It's been such a joy to spend this time with you and to share practical and tested ways to find the right balance of meaning in your work. And to help you put these ideas into action so you haven't wasted the last 30 minutes of your life, why not try today's Wellbeing Lab challenges? Firstly, if you've been struggling to find meaning in your work, then take one task each day this week and ask yourself the questions we explored earlier. Who does this help? What difference does it make for them? Then write down your answer and see what patterns you can spot over the week. However, if you feel like you've been struggling with too much meaning in your work, then challenge yourself each day this week to switch off at a reasonable time each day and invest your energy in other passions such as exercise, time with friends and family, or just relaxing. And if you find this hard, tune into the stories you're telling yourself about why you can't stop and then try again tomorrow. We know you can do this.
And to improve your team's sense of meaning and purpose, try creating a meaning map together. Grab some post-it notes and write down all the different ways that you make a positive difference for others currently in your team. And then have a look, how does that relate to each of your roles? How does it relate to what your organisation as a whole is trying to achieve? And are there opportunities for you to leverage your interests and your strengths individually and collectively to have an even greater positive impact for the people that you serve based on your organization's vision and mission? And if you struggle with this exercise, then it's time to talk to the people that you serve. Think about the scholarship student example and ask them, what difference does what we do each day make for you, and how can we be of greater service? Remember, more than anything else, we each want to feel that what we do matters at work each day. And of course, as always, we've put all of these and more tips into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet, which you can download from the same spot where you found today's podcast. After all, as Professor Amy Ranuski wisely said, your dream job doesn't exist. You must create it. You've been listening to the Wellbeing Lab podcast with Michelle McQuaid.
And Beck Melville. Until the next episode, take care and stay well.